Headline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. And good morning, New Haven Mayor.
Good morning, Paul. How you doing?
Good. Nice to see you, as always.
Good seeing you.
Mayor Harp is here in the studio for her regular Mayor Monday checkup on what she and we are up to in New Haven. You can join the conversation by calling in at 203-872-7ELM, 203-872-7356. And Harry will have the Facebook Live up things like the, if anyone wants to send us any questions via Facebook Live or on the New Haven Independent site. Today's program is made possible in part thanks to support from Birch and Moses PC and from Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. Thanks, Gateway. Thanks, Bircham. Thanks, Mayor Harp.
Thank you, Paul.
How you doing? As usual, you were the busiest person in New Haven this weekend.
It was a busy weekend.
I don't think my intelligence agents filled me in on everywhere you were, but we got a lot of places to ask you about.
Okay.
But before we get there, I want to ask you about St. Louis. So this weekend, you were everywhere in New Haven. First half of last week, you were everywhere in New Haven. On Thursday and Friday, you were in St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes.
Were you going for a pleasure trip?
No, I went to speak on a panel at the National Urban League Conference.
Oh,
yeah.
What was that panel about?
Well, it was about their Main Street Marshall Plan and for urban areas and some of the ideas that they had based upon the work that they do every year to document the state of Black America and as well as the state of urban America. Mm-hmm. And based upon the kinds of problems that you see across the country, they came up with a Marshall Plan to address
them. The Marshall Plan is that was named after World War II when we destroyed Germany, that we were going to rebuild their economy to try to have the prospects for peace.
Right.
And the idea that some ways the best way to recover from disasters is not through military might, but through economic investment.
I think that's the idea, and documenting the kind of economic investment that will be helpful to cities. And the other underlying argument is that when cities are healthy, regions, counties, et cetera, are healthy.
So what did you say in this panel?
Well, you know, one of the things that they talked about and worried about, as we all do, is what happens if the federal government and the state government are not helpful? Because some of what they are looking for is help in lobbying Congress, lobbying the federal administration for some of the resources that we need in our communities. And we all know that we need, you know, CDBG and other kinds of things.
Community block grants.
Right, in our communities. And so what I basically said is, yes, that we've got to organize and collaborate with everyone so that it's not just mayors and city heads, they're all different names for them, working to lobby the federal government. But we've really got to coalesce with not-for-profit organizations and others when we lobby both at the federal and the state level. But beyond that, I said that we've also got to look at what we can do to change some of the patterns of funding that we currently have in the city, that cities that are geared to address problems that they're not addressing well, and that we've got to take a second look at how we allocate our resources, and that we've got to start somewhere. I said, you know, like this was a plan. There must have been 30 things in the plan that could be done or more. But I said, let's just start with maybe two or three of those things. Find the resources locally through your local government and foundations in the area, and start to move on those things.
So what would be an example?
Well, you know, an example that a lot of the smart city initiatives that are going on, it's a Bloomberg competition. But
that we're applying for that, yeah.
We're applying for that, and that would mean that we would have to match some of those dollars with Bloomberg. But that's Bloomberg's foundation, and that helps us to rethink, using data, some of the things that we do, and also using IT in new and innovative ways to solve some of our problems. So that's one example. another example, because one of the things that they looked at was education. We are a promised city. Most of those dollars are coming from the private sector, coming from Yale, coming from the Community Foundation, from Yale New Haven Hospital. And so it's a partnership of sorts that helps to inspire young people to do better in school so that they have an opportunity to go to college free tuition in one of our state institutions.
So there you are at the Urban League. You're in St. Louis.
Right.
You're with other mayors. You're saying, how are we going to get reinvestment back in our cities, especially at a time when, as in Connecticut, states throughout the country are lowering the amount of money they give to cities. Who even knows the federal government, if we're going to have a federal government doing anything in another week? But so am I hearing you right that you're saying we have to look at maybe finding teaming up with the nonprofit sector when we identify our priorities? Is that what you were saying?
Well, I think that we have to, and that we have to come together and find more efficient ways of addressing problems and more in ways that have better outcomes than we've been satisfied with in the past. And I think that there are ways to do that if we all put our heads together. An example that I could give in New Haven is Community Youth Stat. Very little new money went into that program. We'd like for there to be new money to go into it, but it really didn't. But everybody sort of said, let's all work together on this. Let's redirect some existing dollars.
So did you talk to them about Youth Stat?
No, I really didn't.
Because having watched that as a reporter, I do think there was an interesting lesson for other cities, two lessons.
Right.
So tell me if this is the right way to say it. You saw what the police do at USTAT. They share data. People who work in different agencies along with the police look at how they're going to solve a problem.
Right.
And that you said we could do that by identifying whether it's 50 or 100, 150 kids who are most in danger, being in trouble, getting out of school, get their teachers, their administrators, parole workers, youth workers, or even cops, everyone who's working with them in a room, and every week come up with a private strategy for how to deal with them. And what I think might be interesting for other people in cities to hear, and again, tell me if I have this right, was that what part of what made that happen, besides the way that it hadn't been suggested before, was that you used to be in state government. So you were able to call people who run the state health department, state education department, and say, can these people go in a room and privately share information? Because they couldn't really know who the same kids were and what's going on with those kids if the parole officer and the teacher weren't able to say who we're even talking about and how do we deal with them, what kind of situation they've been in. And you got those commissioners to authorize that. Would that be an applicable lesson? Has that mattered?
Well, that's mattered to some degree. But what we knew, and some of it came from my work in the health field, and actually I've got to give this to Sue Weisselberg, who was working for us at the time. We knew that we couldn't share data. The other thing that I knew from the legislature is that we put a lot of money into case management throughout the state system, and that oftentimes you have different departments managing the same families. And so with not the ability to speak to one another because you need a common release form. Everyone thought that that was a simple thing and that we ought to be able to speak to one another and do joint
planning. No reporter would think that, having tried to get information from every level of government.
But most everyone else thinks that you can do that. And so we had to figure out, well, how do we share information? How do we jointly plan for a child and a family? And that's just knowing that that's a problem that needs to be resolved, I think, is what I brought to the table from my experience at the legislature and my work experience. But the fact that we were able to resolve that, come up with a common release form, and get parents to sign, again, you know.
Oh, you need the parent. Okay. So now when you're talking about the kids who are in the most at the most risk.
Right.
They often might not have parents as involved in their lives. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Not always the case. Sometimes not. Was it hard getting parents for 100 kids to sign off on that?
It wasn't hard at all, but we had to go door to door to do it. And so we did canvasses. We had the addresses of
the... And you had the form with you on the canvas?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And who goes on that canvas?
We had teachers. We had people from our youth services department. We had police officers. We had firefighters. We had volunteers.
Wow.
From the community. So we basically asked everyone to come out. We had, you know, like, I think in the first few, we had, you know, 50 or so people, and they would take different streets.
We went to those originally. Have you done those since?
We haven't done one this year because the other thing that we could do after we did it for a couple of years, it's really now part of the overall system of sign-off with New Haven Public Schools.
So when you start the school year and a parent is signing forms, that's one of the forms the parent can sign. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And you're hearing about that on Mayor Monday on WNHH Radio, 103.5 FM, live feed at newhavenindependent.org, your home for community radio. We have a call from Bob. Bob, you are now immortalized in photos with the mayor promoting this program. You guys are a team. How you doing this morning, sir?
Okay. Hello, Mayor. How are you?
Good. How are you, Bob?
Okay. I was listening there about your trip to St. Louis, but I'm going to focus in on some local issues now, and one of them being a story I saw on the news last night about Long Wharf revitalization. Very interesting story, and I guess my main question is when it expands to these 30 food trucks down there and some other things, I don't know how in goodness gracious traffic is going to get through there.
Well, you know, it seems like it hasn't been a problem. And you know what's fascinating to me, Bob, because I knew that people really enjoyed these food trucks and that we could make some improvements that would make it easier for the food trucks to do business and for people to park. And every time I pass there, no matter what time of day or evening, it's really crowded. People get off of the freeway. They park where in the designated parking areas. Thankfully, we have those now. And they're out there enjoying the sound, enjoying the food trucks. And it's
and the trucks are not in traffic, right? You have
no,
a lane
not.
For them to park.
They have a parking lane. They have electricity now. And and we have parking for the people who get off of the highway. So actually, there's less traffic now than there was previously when it was just something that sort of developed over time. So I'm really proud of Steve Fontana. He was the one who led that project, and we have bike lanes out there. It's really quite beautiful and a really wonderful place for people to stop and enjoy New Haven.
Any thanks for that question, Bob. You said you had another question for the mayor?
Yeah, I had a couple more questions. I guess my next question, Mayor, is about the vacancy in, I guess, the 30th Ward of Ron Staggers?
Carlton Staggers.
Carlton, yeah.
Who do you plan on filling? Is it, I guess it's temporary until the primary, is it?
Well, I don't know that there'll be a primary. I think whoever, since there were no ward chairs in Ward 30.
Really? Why are there no ward chairs?
I guess no one applied to be Democratic ward chairs there during the appropriate time. And a decision was made by the party not to just fill those positions. So there were no ward chairs, and I received, about 2 weeks ago, I received his resignation, Mr. Staggers' resignation, and we thanked him for his work. He was on the Board of Alders for a number of years. And so I had been contacted by someone named Michelle Edmund Sepulveda, who had been an Alder person previously for that ward. And she had indicated that if asked, she would serve. And since there were no ward chairs to give me three names to select from, she volunteered. I told her that I would appoint her. So I'm hopefully going to swear her in on Wednesday.
Now, is she also running for the general election, do you know?
I believe she may. I'm not sure.
Because then there will be a primary because Darnell Goldson's wife is taking out petitions. He's a former Ward 30 Alder as well.
Okay.
And he's on the Board of Ed, and she is also running for the position. Yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting. So we'll have democracy over there.
Yeah, Michelle Sepulveda has, you know, a real Democratic-minded person. She's always been involved in schools, did community dance groups and things like that for the kids. Very, very nice person. Ward 30 is where has two sides to it,
right?
Two voting places. I love in New Haven how we have so many voting places, almost like three voting places per person. One year I sent a reporter out to the B out of the two A and B voting sites
right.
to see how many hours it was till the first person came and the number of wild turkeys way outnumbered the voters. I think it was 2 p.m. when the seven people working there got to have a voter come in. So Ward 30 is on one side of on West Rock,
right,
is the rebuilt wonderful developments that used to be ghettos, mm-hmm, and aren't now, the Brookside and Rockview.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, you have Valley Street, and you have McConaughey Terrace, but you also have a lot of people own their homes or rent.
Right.
And I think it's the lowest participating ward. It could be that or Ward 3. And both of those have, because of ways districts are spread out, they have to have all these voting places under the Secretary of State. We spend all this money. We have trouble finding enough people to man them. But, you mentioned there are no ward co-chairs. Democracy does not thrive in that neighborhood. So few people vote. It's hard. You have no one ward chairs. It's hard to find people to run. I guess there's not much we could do about that, huh?
Well, there isn't, and I'm hopeful that some of the old ward chairs who've been ward chairs previously will consider doing it again.
And Bob, thank you for calling into Mayor Monday.
Yeah, I got two more questions.
Well, let's make it one, okay, Bob? Bob, I'm going to ask you one more, okay?
Okay, one more. I guess I'm going to ask about the press conference last week, why it was moved from Lincoln Bassett to the Rotary on Dixwell and Munson Orchard there.
I'm going to let others know what
your response.
Thank you, Bob. I'll let people know what that is. There was after Tyreek Keyes, he's a 14-year-old boy, got shot to death in New Hallville, and his murder is still unsolved, but people are working on it very hard, the police. Both top police officers and Mayor Harp and her crew went out to New Hallville just to talk to people, to update them on what's being done to address the violence. So many people are upset. And it was held at that kind of crossroads, the juncture of Orchard Street, Munson Street, and Dixwell, where you kind of enter New Hallville from Dixwell. And a lot of people shut up and vented about how upset they are about the violence. They want more to be done. And it was originally scheduled for Lincoln Bassett School. And one thing some of the people there were not happy about is they were told to go to Lincoln Bassett School, and then they were late because it got moved down the street. So I guess Bob's question is why it was moved.
Well, it was moved because the school district asked us to move it. They've worked really hard over at Lincoln Bassett to, one, I think they improved on the school accountability test more than any other school in the city. They've done some really positive and productive things there. And they did not want to be associated with, at least that's what I was told, with some of the negative things that are happening in the community. They felt that the students there are working really, really hard doing positive and productive things, and they just wanted to have their school seen in a positive and productive light. And so we respected that, and we moved it down the street.
That was such an interesting event, Mayor Harp, and you said something I thought about all week after seeing that event. So people wanted to see your face. They wanted to see the cop's face. They wanted to say, what are you doing about this? And you had a difficult mission there because you went out there to talk to folks, and you knew they were upset, and there is no question that crime has gone down a lot, including in New Hallville. We were used to so many shootings that each shooting was not necessarily news. And at this point last year, there had been three murders, and that was down, amid shooting going down for the 4 years previous. This was the first murder of the year, a horrible one, a 14-year-old standing on a street corner. You had three shootings in a week, so people were upset about it. So you needed to tell them what you were doing, everything from USTAT, like we just talked about, to other programs, and about the statistics, but you also understood that that wasn't going to make people feel better.
Right.
And people started yelling at you, kind of took over the press conference and said, here's what we want to hear from you. What about opportunities? There was one guy who committed a murder who was giving you a hard time for not mediating, but there were other people. There was a woman who lost her son, mm-hmm, in violence and saying, I love you. I know you care, but you can't come out here and just say, here's how great it is when we're losing our kids. And you said, I understand that. And afterwards, you said to me on the record, I'd rather they're yelling at me than at someone who might shoot them. They have to be able to hear what we're doing, and we have to be able to hear how upset they are. Were you thinking that going in? Did you know you were going to lose sort of stewardship of that press conference?
I knew that people were unhappy, and I had a good idea, actually, that it was going to be confrontational. But I still thought it was important to do. There's some who disagree with me. But
you guys definitely kept your cool. I did not hear defensiveness. But it was a tough situation.
It was a tough situation, and you know, honestly, we have ideas. There are things that we're doing, and what I wanted to make clear to people is, if you think that there's some other things that we could be doing, we'll take them into consideration. And if it seems like it will help, we will try to do them. And
Kermit Carolina, who used to be the principal at Hill House, has a lot of credibility in the community. Right. He's worked with a lot of kids who are in tough situations. He took the mic and he talked about the problem. He's challenged people, saying, be part of the solution. We're doing a lot of stuff that you could be part of.
Right.
And then he took it across the street and they asked us not to record it as reporters and talk to the people who were making noise, saying, okay, let's have it out. And you could tell it was animated from across the street.
Yeah.
I'm hearing what you're saying, talk. Now let's talk about what we're going to do about it together, which I thought was pretty... I thought that was a good coda to the whole thing.
No, I think so. And, you know, honestly, we really want to make our neighborhood safe, all of them. And we want people to believe that that's what we intend to do. And if they have ideas that we haven't thought of, let us know what they are. And we will work on them together.
One idea that some church people had was to bring kids to plant vegetables on Sunday, i.e. New Life. On Saturday at the community garden, one of so many beautiful community gardens in Hallville, right at the spot where that murder took place. There is a community garden, and there's an article about it in the New Haven Independent today, where all these teenagers said they went there to plant vegetables on Saturday afternoon with the church and said, we're sorry what happened, Tyreek, we're part of making our neighborhood a better place. I thought that was kind of neat.
I think that's neat, too,
And so there were other things going on this weekend, and we're talking about that on Mayor Monday with Mayor Tony Harp on WNHH Radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. You went to a 100th anniversary on your way back from coming back from St. Louis and hobnobbing with the mayors of the city. You were back in New Haven, of the country, I mean. You were back in Dixwell neighborhood on Saturday, and you were pretty busy. One place you stopped was the 100th anniversary of the Stetson Library on Dixwell Avenue. What was that all about?
Well, it was the 100th anniversary of Stetson Library. And one of the things that they wanted to do was to celebrate their anniversary. And I think that is really important, to also celebrate how important libraries are to democracy. It's the one thing that America has, that New Haven has, that... that other countries don't have, and that's access to information, free information, access to technology, so that you can go into our libraries, use our computers, and get access to even downtown a 3D computer, which, you know, honestly...
What's a 3D computer?
I know. See, you're from my generation, although I'm a little bit older than you. But it's a computer that actually... can print things in 3D, and then you can use them to make little widgets.
Wow.
It's really amazing. Some people use it to make jewelry. They also can make little kinds of, as I said before, widgets that go into machines.
Well, I know they have that whole kind of, you have a business on river in Fairhaven near the river there that works in that kind of printing, 3D printing.
Right.
Where people started making guns out of that, but there are much more useful, positive uses that are being found for that.
I'm thinking jewelry, you know.
Well, you know, two things about Stetson. First of all, they were publicizing a campaign to raise money for Stetson.
Right.
They're going to be moving into the new Q House from across the street at Dixwell Plaza into a new home. But
there
also
was a Mr. Ford there that did this beautiful, beautiful picture that looked like Diane Brown,
the librarian there,
the librarian standing over stacks that were pretty much empty. And as people donate $1,000, then you can fill the stacks up. So we're asking people to donate. And for every dollar that is donated, up to $250,000, it will be matched by a local benefactor.
Wow. And you know, the other thing, you were talking about how the roles library plays, people don't realize always that more people are going to the library in New Haven than ever before. It's an amazing story. Because everyone said, what happened to books? What happens to libraries? You don't get out of the house anymore to get anything you need. And yet, you know, we had a story last week about the Hill Branch, which has quintupled the number of people taking out DVDs. And, you know, video stores don't work anymore, but the neighborhood branch does too. But also all the relevant ways that libraries are reaching people now, everything from job searches to web connectivity to community events to real reading and books still. They're still buying books. And in Dixwell has become such a community center. Diane Brown grew up going to that branch. She's expanded that branch. I know when good things add bad things happen, that neighborhood, especially young people, that's a safe place mm-hmm. where they're doing interesting stuff after school on weekends with Diane Brown.
And they have chess clubs. They have book clubs. They have all kinds of things for kids after school. It's not really their main responsibility as a library, but it's something that they take on. And I'm really proud of the work that they do there.
You talked about our generation. So we're learning the new technology, but that's an old idea.
Yeah.
That libraries matter. You said they're the engines of democracy, and they are engines of democracy in New Haven right now.
They really are.
I love the way how they lobby you, how they use social media at budget time and get people to make their case, to show their support and come up. And they've succeeded in the budget process.
That's right. They have seven new positions, right?
All right. We have Tom wrote in with a question on Facebook. Good morning, Mayor. What do you think should happen to the old strong school on Grant Avenue? Will the city go with a developer and project even if the selection committee does not approve of the developer? Can I just fill in our listeners what he's talking
sure.
about?
Mm-hmm.
The strong school has been vacant for 10 years, the old strong school on Grant Avenue. It's costing you money every year to keep it up. It's not producing tax revenue. You guys have put out a request for proposal, RFP, bureaucraties, to ask someone to do something with it. The mm-hmm. neighborhood had an idea of making community arts center, maybe some housing on top. They never got the money, or you didn't feel it was viable enough that was ever going to happen. So that project never advanced the stage. There's a whole selection process with the selection committee. But this other developer from, I guess, Meriden and Litchfield, who has built stuff, said, I got an idea. I'm going to pay $500,000. Then I'm going to spend $2 million fixing it up into these small apartments, 300 square foot apartments. We'll have some community space. And the community, led by people who wanted to do the other project, have really organized opposition. The selection committee met last week in Fairhaven and heard an overwhelming presentation about how they didn't want it. They felt that the apartments are too expensive, that they wanted more of a community center, that they didn't like this developer's track record. So where does that stand now?
Well, you know, we are going to take into consideration everything that the community said and make a decision. I'm going to say that part of the reason we're a democracy is that we pay attention to what people think. And so I will pay a lot of attention to the recommendation that is given by the committee.
You know, they think different things. So there's no question that the people who are active in that neighborhood are against this project no matter what.
Yep.
And that's part of democracy. Our polls in the Independent are not scientific.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear that the majority of people who pay attention to the city want this project for a variety of reasons. They feel like rather than have the city spend however much it is, because it's contested, to keep it up and have it be vacant, they'd like to see you get $500,000 this year when the state's cutting our money, and every year have taxes there and have people living in that neighborhood. Nobody gets displaced. That's a tough decision then, landing on your lap, because democracy involves hearing both sides.
It does.
And then making a decision and not getting, someone's not going to be happy. And
yeah.
you got to watch out for the books in your town.
Well, we do. And so, you know, I haven't heard from the group yet that heard from the people who came down. And I'll be making a decision once I hear.
What if the organized neighborhood's against it? And what if civically involved people in the city afford, and what if you conclude that you need the money?
Well, you know, I think that what we would try to do is to try to explain to people in the community why we would go forward with this particular developer. So if that's the decision, and I haven't made one yet, no matter what, I think I've got some splaining to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, some splaining, Lucy. So you see, that's our generation. I love Lucy. Well, I have to say that developer probably wrote the textbook case of how not to deal with a neighborhood. He just did not know about New Haven.
That's
he
right.
blew them off when they wanted to meet with him when he wanted to do this project. He had them drive up to Litchfield County. He was pretty nasty to them, according to them. Maybe they said things that he didn't like. He came to a public meeting. It continued being testy. So that makes it harder for me to make the decision.
He was also difficult with my chief of staff as well. That's not a good thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, at any rate.
So we're in the real world where human beings are not robots, and they don't all act in the easiest way to get things done.
Are we sure we don't know that? I mean, do you ever wonder if you're a robot sometimes?
Cyborg? I actually think that as soon as that Google gets that chip and play in your brain, that helps you access the internet with the eyeglasses and everything, and then tells you what you want to buy. I actually think we are becoming cyborgs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about everything that you, that how your body runs itself, and we don't really run it.
Oh, I see what you mean. Our bodies are machines. That's
true. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like they're already.
And in our brain, our nerve centers are telling us sort of how we're reacting to things.
Yeah.
It's not always a rational process.
Exactly.
So then if this developer is difficult to deal with,
maybe it's not his fault.
Maybe he was programmed that way.
We got to give him the right vitamin and minerals.
and his program works
a little better.
And have him listen to Mayor Monday at WNHH Radio, where you're listening to Mayor Monday at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenimpen.org. Mayor Harp, we got an emailed question.
Okay.
Or actually comment. It was posted as a comment to the article about the show. From Hugh Naven. That's H-E-W-N-A-V-E-N. He's a regular commenter. I do believe it's a he looking at the email address. Mayor Harp, it's summertime. Can we have another blitz on speeding drivers, especially on those extraordinarily wide streets like ETG Boulevard? It stands for?
Ella? Grass.
Oh. All right. Boom. Then he says, thanks, best Hugh Naven.
Okay. All right. You know, I'll check with our police department. We do have a traffic squad, you know, and it may not be bad for them to be out there for a while. I wish you'd told me what times are the best times.
But yeah. Okay. So Hugh Naven maybe write back about what are the best times. And you do have a squad that goes out, and Boulevard has been a particular focus of attention. In fact, there's an article in the New Haven Independent last week about how your traffic crew was out at Boulevard, is concerned about the traffic, and especially at the crossing at Orange Avenue, and how hard it is across there. And you talked earlier about smart cities and grants. That might be, I'm not sure. They're applying for grant money from some program to see about making it easier to cross those streets.
Right.
And I know that we have rubber duckies up. You know, those orange things.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first place in town, I believe. They went up more at Legion Avenue and Ella T. Grasso, where they really do speed like demons there. And people have been hit. And so a lot of ideas have been tried there. I know a lot more will be tried.
And, you know, unfortunately, I think it's a state road, too, which makes it even harder to do physical things.
It was the state that
there.
Did the rubber ducky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now we haven't even begun about your weekend because of these questions coming up. Sheila E. was on the green. I heard that was fantastic.
That was fantastic. People, everybody that I see, I was in New Hallville yesterday, and I did a little bit of door-to-door, and one gentleman said, oh, Sheila, it was a great concert. It's wonderful. Who's yeah. And unfortunately, it's the last one for Market New Haven, but
the concert like? Big crowd?
Big crowd. I think the biggest crowd so far this year on the green. She was very interactive with the audience. As a matter of fact, someone whispered in my ear, she must be a security nightmare, because she got up off the stage and she went to the very back of the first few rows. So she was checking people beyond the fence, and she was playing her guitar and she was singing, and people just love it.
And she's really, Babs Olsavi was saying today, she's 63 years old.
No, she said she was 60. She'll be 60 in November or December. Wow. But she looks good.
And she's moving.
Yeah. Maybe that's the secret.
So
you dance
there,
every night.
There is
and
hope.
Sing.
Now, you also, were you there for the NAACP march on Saturday, too?
No, I wasn't.
Because you were also at Stetson. And then there was also a human trafficking event?
Yes, I was at the library. That was just to help people become aware of what human trafficking is and how it impacts so many of our young people. And they really don't know it, how social media contributes to that, and it makes so many of our young people vulnerable. It was really very interesting.
Love 146 is an international anti-human trafficking group that's based on Chapel Street.
Okay.
Were they involved with this?
Yes, they were. They had, I believe their local director was there. She was phenomenal. And she broke down how easy it is for kids to be caught up in this world. And it's really frightening. And I really think one of the things that I would like to do is to have her come and speak to our police academy, find a way for her to come and speak to our education, to our teachers when they have teacher meetings, and make sure that everyone knows so that they can help identify kids that are likely to be vulnerable to this. Also to parents, so that parents can know what makes kids vulnerable. It's really frightening.
It is kind of.
It really is.
And then there was Peruvian Independence Day. You did that too?
Yes.
Now, what was that all about? That was Sunday?
Well, that was...
We do have a Peruvian community in New Haven.
It's a big community, and they were celebrating their independence. I think they won their independence in 1917, and I think it was July 30th.
But not bad.
Not bad.
18.7 square miles in our city.
I know. And, you know, the interesting thing was that they benefit so much from the Promise Scholarship, and they were so...
Oh, yeah? Like Peruvian American kids who were in our schools?
Mm-hmm. And they're so excited, and what they said was that at UConn, they're the second largest in number Hispanic group.
I had no idea.
Yeah, no. So
I know New Haven, we have from many countries. I know Mexican American is a big population in America. I know we have Ecuadorian population pretty strong, and now Peruvians too.
Peruvians.
What did they do for the event? Where were you? What was going on?
So we were right by that. We did a flag raising. Their general consul from Hartford came and gave a speech. I gave a proclamation. They gave out scholarships, and I think this community really cares about education. They gave out scholarships to some of the young people who are in college, who are members of their organization, and then they had they did some of the sort of cultural aspects of Peruvian life. They had dancers who danced the dances from the different regions in Peru. It's really always very nice. I always get to dance a little bit with
that. You had a dancing weekend between Sheila E. and that.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
And then you went to some church public safety event. That one was off our radar. What was
oh,
that?
Sure. That was at First Calvary Baptist Church. They recognized our first responders and gave out awards, and it was very nice. The fire police, our EMT folks were there, as well as our PSAP.
It's amazing. That's public service answering point, or 911 operators.
Right.
It's amazing how many places you go in a weekend. A lot goes on in New Haven.
Oh, a lot goes on, yeah.
And this coming weekend, we got Hoop It Up, right? And that's when we close off Church Street in front of City Hall. And we are, I guess it's 3-on-3. You get kids and young adults, organized teams. And now in the recent years, you've started a couple of years ago, part of the idea of giving young people something to do in the summer. And you've invited Hartford down. Is it just Hartford now, or also another city?
You know, I think Bridgeport is, and actually we have four, Bridgeport, Waterbury, and Hartford.
Wow, so we're going to have them play in 2 days where you can't drive in front of City Hall in the afternoon because people playing hoop in the street.
Right.
And usually have some DJs there. I mean, YBC was there last time I checked.
And some music, yeah. So it should be really nice for people. So come on down.
And hoop it up.
And hoop it up.
All right. And you're listening to, you're hooping it up with Mayor Tony Harp on Mayor Monday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenadvent.org. We're not hooping it up in Hartford. We're now about to start August. As of the end of June, by law, we're supposed to have a state budget. We don't have a state budget. And a lot of money is in jeopardy. Today's a vote about whether to whether the legislature is going to accept a concessions deal with state unions that will take, I think they said, a third out of the $5.1 billion 2-year deficit the state's facing. In the meantime, you guys are scrambling. What's the latest update, Mayor Harp? How much money that's in our new budget is at risk?
Well, we get a little over $60 million in September from the state. If they haven't, and it funds education, funds some of our operations, if they haven't done a budget by the end of this month, then, you know, we are in a world of trouble. We expect that those dollars will come through at some point, but we won't have the resources to cover a number of our expenses.
How much money, how many million dollars in specifically are you guys looking at having to find new plans for?
You know, I think that, first of all, I think, just to be clear, we expect the money to come at some point. It's just a matter of when.
Short term.
Okay. So short term, we're thinking that we might have a $30 million problem.
For the fiscal year. Now, eventually, how much of that $30 million do you expect to get?
All of it. So we expect to get it. By that I mean by September, we're going to need at least another $30 million. What we have that we're expecting beyond what we've gotten in the past is about $18 million.
And is that going to come?
We're hoping that it comes, but if it doesn't, we have plans to deal with that.
Now, those plans include a tax increase?
No.
So without a tax, so if I have it straight, there's $30 million we generally got year to year that you expect we're going to get it again, but there's going to be a short-term cash problem
right.
because they can't get a budget together.
Right.
On top of that, there's $18 million that you were promised to increase, and you've made plans for that money that does not include a tax increase.
Right. So we're asking our department heads, our coordinators, to take a look at how they can sort of like tighten the belt.
Any examples? Like, will there be layoffs? Will there be service cuts?
We're hoping that we won't have to do any of that, but, you know, we're asking our department heads to prepare for that kind of thing should that come to pass, should we need to do that. We're hoping that we won't have to do that.
And when does that do, their plans?
You know, it should be, they're working on them now, and so by the end of August, we expect.
Now, I'm not optimistic about them having a budget by the end of August. The word in the articles that were written in from the Capitol
mm-hmm.
is that they're not planning. The governor says he doesn't expect anything in August. People are on vacation.
Well, I know that I spoke to Representative Walker this morning, and I know she's up there working. She hopes to, she and other members of the House who are negotiating, hope to sit with the Senate today and try to bang something out.
Do you think would you vote in favor of the union concessions?
Yes.
All right. One guy I know who really knows the legislature 10 times better than I do, his take on it was, he emailed me today, said, while legislators are carrying on about fundamental labor rights and whether or not to sign off on this concessions package, it took months to negotiate and ratify. It now seems any budget process is being held hostage. They're writing off August because it's a vacation month. Meanwhile, New Haven's the only city in the state with its stuff together. They're going to let it wind up in the precarious position of the state's other major cities. I think what I really found interesting about that comment was that we've balanced our budgets for years now. Hartford is saying it needs a $40 to $50 million bailout just not to declare bankruptcy. Are we in danger of being put in the precarious position of other cities because of the lack of a state budget? Or do you think planning for this $18 million will do the trick?
Well, I'm hoping, you know, look, I've been in the legislature when it's taken a few months after the time that by constitution we're supposed to have a budget. So that happens. My 21 years of experience there's always been a budget. And so I'm assuming that the legislators who know that is their main role will fulfill that role.
Are they going to hear it from city and towns?
Yeah, they are. You know, I was at the South Central Regional Council of Governments, or SCROG, and towns are really worried. And not just our town, and not just the towns that are already on the precipice, but other towns could be thrown into a really negative position if this thing is not solved pretty soon. So,
do you think they'll still bail out Hartford? Are they going to find $40 or $50 million to stop them from declaring bankruptcy?
Well, we can't afford to have any city in our state go bankrupt. It impacts the state's bond, its credit worthiness, and so the state has an obligation to address it in some way.
So they're going to reward Hartford for not making some of the tough decisions we made in New Haven and therefore take money away from us to prop them up.
Well, that's what usually happens. And, you know, one of the things, though, this time, the governor is saying that, and I think the legislature would do this as well, that if we have to prop you up in that way, then we're going to have more to say about how you handle the money we give you.
So you would support that?
I would.
All right. And so let's keep our fingers crossed about the state budget.
All right.
But do you feel we're
more than crossed? We have to expect that it happens.
One sad story last week was the arrest by local police of a prominent rabbi in town on sexual assault charges, a rabbi who had lost a $21 million suit.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Greer in the Edgewood neighborhood that for years he was allegedly raping boys there. Two questions, public policy questions, pop up in my mind. One is, there's still a school there.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are still there. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, if he was the only problem and he's been taken care of and is no longer a part of the school, I don't.
He's out on bond.
Well, I'm hoping that the people who oversee the school, the people who govern the school, will know that it's probably not in the best interest of the school to necessarily. It's important that they make a decision that is in the best interest of the children, and I don't know that. And I'm assuming that he understands that, and
he's physically present with the kids every day, at their dorm, inside the school.
Well, that's frightening.
But I think the issue for you, and that's really not your business as much as the Department of Children and Families statewide. But what will be an issue, I think, for your neighborhood's agency, is that the nonprofits associated with that school, run by the rabbi, stabilized the Edgewood neighborhood.
Yes.
Over a period of decades, they bought over 40 multifamily properties, fixed them up. They run those properties. The rabbi's sons have left town who manage those properties. He now has an outside agency doing that. Are you folks looking at any contingency plans? Because if 40 properties get neglected, that has a big impact on that neighborhood.
But, you know, he's just one person. And there are other people up who I've known for years and respect that are a part of that organization.
Oh, yeah? Oh.
And I think that they are going to continue to be good neighbors.
Okay, that's good to know. And so you also, last week, you got renominated to be the Democratic Party candidate for mayor. You're running for a third term.
Yes.
We had a convention, but you were not. The excitement of the convention was probate judge, where they needed two ballots and people changing their votes in between the first and second ballot to nominate a candidate. So that's going to be fun to watch for political junkies like myself. Then yesterday you had an event at the Bird Sanctuary at one of the community gardens in New Hallville. What a beautiful place.
It's gorgeous. Gorgeous. And it was all, well, it was done with the assistance of URI, but it was all local love and work that made that community garden what it is. It's just, well, it's so unexpected. It's right there on Dixwell and Ivy Street. It's like a little bit of paradise.
And like that other one at Dixwell and near where the shooting was at Bassett. And there are, I mean, I can think there are at least a dozen, I think, in New Hallville. And yesterday, last week, Barbara Vereen, who's a New Hallville activist, was here in the radio saying, you know, so many amazingly great things happen in New Hallville, and they don't make the news the way a 14-year-old getting shot does. And of course, that should be news, because it matters when a 14-year-old gets shot. And it's not necessarily newsworthy that, like, beautiful community garden is still beautiful in New Hallville. But I am inspired. Last week, I went by the one on Star Street where the guys hang out after tending it all day, and that thing is so fecund. I mean, they feed a lot of families
they
with
do.
The produce and that.
And they have a farmer's market, I think, in the fall, and sell off some of the vegetables and share it with neighbors. It's really a great community building.
So many good things happening
activity there.
Mm-hmm. And tonight you got a visiting congressman, James Clyburn from South Carolina, and Rosa DeLauro. You're going to be endorsed at a rally at Varick Church.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a big night, so the campaign is starting up.
Yeah.
He's from South Carolina, James Clyburn. New Haven has a real connection to South Carolina. A lot of families in our black community trace their roots there, and some of them go back. I believe there's probably more South Carolinian descended people in a police department than maybe from certain neighborhoods in New Haven. Was that anything to do with, or is that just a coincidence that he's coming?
No, I think it was, he's a good friend of our congresswoman, Rosa DeLauro, and he was delighted to come.
He's in the center of so many of the interesting issues in Washington right now. You see that guy quoted a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say tonight.
It will be, yeah.
And then coming up, we got today, you have a press conference about the Connecticut Open. So even though there are no more concerts for this summer, there's a lot going on in town. You're going to be talking, I believe, about the Connecticut Open, which is the 18th it starts. That's the tennis tournament.
Mm-hmm.
The Opera-palooza is back.
Yes.
That's always one of our favorite things to promote. I know you had a great time there last year.
And you know, Tomas's stepson sings in that. He's got a fabulous voice.
And of course, Tomas is Tomas Reyes, your chief of staff.
That's right, yeah. So come on out and
so
hear
keep
them.
Ears out for Chief of Staff's son, singer. I know he sang opera.
Yeah.
And you got the New Haven Road Race coming, the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So we're going to have more good things to talk about on Mayor Monday.
We are a beautiful city. Let me tell you something about, I've gone to cities all across the country, and there is no other city that I've gone to that hasn't. It's downtown what we have in ours. We should really be proud.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We will talk about that, but for now, we're going to say goodbye and thank you for listening to Mayor Monday today. Thank you, Mayor Harp.
Thank you.
For making time in your schedule. Thanks, people who submitted questions and watched. And thank you to Bertram Moses, PC. And thank you to Gateway Community College for supporting today's program. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the CD A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass reminding us all that we do know what it feels like to be free. We just have to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all day and night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.